Welcome to Partnering with Parents, brought to you by the Classical Academies. Join us every other Tuesday as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
I'm Cameron Curry. I'm the CEO for the Classical Academies, and it's time for another podcast. And I love the fact that we keep bringing in great speakers to really encourage our families and really share so much broader information about what's going on with education, not only locally, statewide, but nationally. And today with us is Jeannie Allen, and we're going to be talking about reshaping education to emerge stronger and smarter in the post-pandemic world. So Jeannie Allen, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Cameron. My pleasure.
Well, Jeannie, for those of us who may not know a lot about you, please take the time to tell us a little bit about your work. I know that you have been so active on the national stage. And so tell our audience who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thank you. So I am the CEO and founder of the Center for Education Reform, which is an almost 29-year-old, 29 later in October.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I used to be 23.
exactly. We all were.
Oh, my gosh. And I founded it in 1993 to initially bridge the gap between policy and practice. There, back then, there was not a lot of work being done to ensure that parents and teachers and community members all had power to govern their kids' education. And in fact, the California charter school law was on the dais, if you will, being considered when I founded CER. And as you all know, listening out there, so much has happened and allowed the kind of work you have to go on. But I was very frustrated that sitting in Washington, D.C., where I lived at the time, was a lot of people were just impervious to the kind of change, innovation, and demand and frustration, frankly, people had all over the country. And I just kept watching that these, we had a couple great laws coming to the fore in some states, and a lot of folks just weren't paying much attention. So anyway, CER was started to help advance the notion of innovation, opportunity, and education, and here we are.
And here we are. So what are the ways that you see education changing post-pandemic, and what are the factors really driving those changes?
Well, I think we're going from the notion that the majority, vast majority of people, even in innovative schools, still thought that education looked and should be pretty much the same as when they were young. You have a school, you have a bus, you have your lunch periods, you have, right, you have physical education. And maybe there's some really interesting new technologies because, after all, that's what we've had for the last 20 years. But pretty much it's a place that, kids go, students become students, and students become adults. And, you know, unless you're super poor, everything's going to be fine. A little Lake Wobegon and, not as much kind of demand and concern. And post-pandemic, or sort of during and post-pandemic, I think in the midst of what we're doing right now, I mean, what we see is this enormous pent-up, so people suddenly realize, you all know this, when you run schools, you understand this, people suddenly realize, oh, wait a minute, it's not just me and my child that's having the problem with Mrs. Smith's math class. This is not a cut on anyone at Classical named Smith. I don't even know if there is a Smith. I presume there is.
There's got to be. There's somewhere.
Right, or it's not like the principal, let's take away from Classical Academy, it's the principal down the street. It's not just me. Oh my gosh, it turns out hundreds of thousands, if not millions of other people have been wondering what their kids were doing in school. I just was too afraid to ask. So, quick story, Cameron, and it makes me think of this. When my children, I have four, my children were in school, and I didn't have charters in the area, and the public schools were too centralized, too big, and didn't really care what I thought about curriculum because I went and asked them, and they thought it was really strange.
So like, what is this parent doing in here? You're supposed to drop your child off and go get out of here.
Totally. No. Oh my gosh. They were like, hey, we have invented spelling over here. We want to share with you. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Tell me how that works. And the woman looked at me like, what are you crazy? Don't you know? Like, this is what we do. This is the latest fad. And I literally went back to my desk. She didn't know who I was. And I wrote a newsletter about it.
Mm.
And I resolved that I was never going to send my kids to school. So here they were in a small Catholic school nearby. And I'll never forget asking why my son, literally Johnny, was not doing reading at grade level. And the curriculum there was exact same as an inner city charter school I had visited in Ohio. And they're like, oh, you're the only one who has that problem. And
oh,
I think a lot of parents across the country have felt like that for years. In fact, I know they have because we used to get calls from them regularly. And the pandemic was a wake-up call to people that things are not okay. They haven't been okay for the vast majority of people. And, oh, by the way, it's not just your child.
Right. Absolutely.
And
right.
So I think that's making people more vigilant. It is, it's also on a sort of not just positive coming from negative, but on a positive note, people are realizing like, I've always wanted to maybe help my child learn a couple of days a week and send them to school the rest of the time, or there's diverse learning environments, or, oh, this is interesting. What's this blended learning thing?
Mm-hmm.
Eye-opening for you guys. I think so many people were hearing did not realize how little substance kids were really learning until they actually watched them turn on their Zoom and kind of learn Pablum.
Well, and the other thing too is I looked at this whole thing as this is the greatest disruption for change that any of us could ever value or want. And then unfortunately, too many of our traditional counterparts are trying to scurry back to how do we keep the normal of 2 years ago, instead of using this as the greatest opportunity to change and to connect with students in a brand new way and to kind of rethink public education in general.
Yes. And the idea that students can and also should be learning with a lot more agency,
mm-hmm.
That you can take someone through, I don't know, world history and kind of make it fun and interesting and project-based, that maybe those going faster can help those that are not where they are in terms of something, but that faster and slower actually is not a condemnation of someone's ability.
Mm-hmm.
It just is what it is because we're all so different.
Yes.
And so that transformation is, I think, also happening. And I think it's causing parents in particular to ask more questions.
Which is awesome. We need more parents engaged in the education of their son or daughter. It's huge. So
yes.
We know education innovation is prevalent in the world today. And so what are some of your favorite examples of how you see charter public schools reshaping education?
Oh, you know, they're always, it's just so fun and interesting to continue to watch the evolution. You know, they were in fact the first innovative neighborhood public schools, and I think they continue to soar. You know, I'll start with content. You know, the fact that you don't have to abide by the publishing requirements or pick these five textbooks,
right.
I think is enormous.
It's
the
huge.
Teachers. Oh, it's huge. And the teachers that I see that are taking it into their own hands and buying the canon, right? Buying the original books and bringing them to class. I've gone to probably five or six in the last couple of weeks to see what's happening since we've been able to go back and start visiting and read about some and shared with some. But, you know, for example, one of the charter school networks in Florida created their own dashboard's the wrong word, but it's essentially the platform. It's a student information plus learning management plus teacher management platform that connects all of the different programs, apps, services, everything you can imagine in one place that they created on their own using their own curated programs that students
love that
jump onto.
Love that.
So we were looking at the kids were actually going on and looking at their most recent assessment on the Florida website, where their most recent kind of, it wasn't the formal assessment, but you can see how you did on the last practice test.
Okay.
And they're giving, you know, kids points for doing more and different and better things or staying on task. And then they could spend, you know, 10 minutes or 15 minutes even, while everybody else was accomplishing their goals, going into their own enrichment activities. I've seen, you know, podcasts created on campuses, on charter campuses, nursing, introducing kids to nursing as early as 9. We've seen, and then they want to become a nurse. Oh, flash, what amazing.
Amazing.
By 11 or 12.
Yep.
Graduating students and with an AA degree, introducing them to elementary ed as tutors and interns, and then they come back and teach in the same charter school. That's happening
full
in a handful
circle.
Of places. Full circle.
Full circle.
And graduating these alumni that do want to come back and do full circle. I mean, we've seen a focus on arts. We've seen a focus on the classics, as you know. We've seen flipped classrooms where, again, you might have 20, 30 students in a classroom, but 10 are doing one thing while another 10 are doing another thing, and maybe the other 10 are nowhere to be found anywhere in that room. And then they all trade places. And their activity and their energy and their creativity by doing sort of direct work, then adaptive work, and then applying it out in the field is remarkable. And so there are so many hundred examples. Look, and that doesn't mean that there are not innovative public schools that are
oh,
doing
sure.
the same,
sure.
right? Phoenix Unified is one of my favorite. There's others around the country. But the struggles that those district schools, Cameron, have to go through to get that done, oh, I got to ask permission. Oh, the teacher's not allowed to stay after school. Oh, you know, name the bureaucracy.
Exactly. Has nothing to do with students and their learning, for sure.
Yeah.
Too many
exactly.
adults in the room.
Who's got the money? Oh, I've got to spend it myself because by the time I get permission from central office, you know, the kids will be graduated.
Exactly.
So I think the reshaping is really just every day. If you're allowed to think flexibly about what works and what doesn't, then you tend to do things different and better every day.
Run to that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're also seeing dramatic employment landscape shifts happening globally. And we know that this will require a new approach to educating and training the future workforce. So how do we ensure that our youth are actually prepared for that future work?
Yes, and it is changing a lot. You know, I was out at the ASU-GSV summit. Fascinating discussions. Everybody should kind of log on to the summit website, ASU-GSV Summit, I think.com.
Okay.
So many great videos and sessions about everything. But this thread of college and career and why too many students today, even who have graduated from a four-year school, if that was their path, don't really have a career path or aren't successful, is always a question. And so, you know, the notion of, you know, Netflix partnering with a university to make sure that people working at Netflix can actually get not just credentials, but if they want to turn those credentials into a degree, they can now, thanks to Coursera, for example,
okay.
which is an online higher ed provider based right there north of you guys. And so what's happening is companies are realizing they're responsible in part to help articulate and also train the workforce of the future. They're realizing that everybody wants, just like when our kids are in scouts, they want to be badged. They're realizing that badging is really kind of a good idea, and badging can lead to credentials, and credentials can lead to a two-year degree or a four-year degree or higher, but that you don't actually have to have all of those or any of those to be successful as long as you have the skills. But the question is, how do you make sure you have that education and training? And so, as I said, sort of companies are recognizing that, higher ed is recognizing that, and then I think the most exciting thing is when K-12 recognizes it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of data and discussion about introducing students as early as third or fourth grade, not to a specific career or specific track, but to a wide array of fields that adults and grownups are in.
Right.
And what exists, like how did my Mac get in front of me? What is it that my microphone is doing, right? How did my phone, what about the new Turbis tumbler that's keeping my water cold? All of the products, services, and things our kids are exposed to were created. There's a supply chain out there, right? There's a whole world of work and business and entrepreneurship that if you talk to them about it or if you expose them to it, it may lead their brain to think in ways and about things they want to do that will help schools target their learning. And so that's what we're hoping to see. I'd love to see a school. I mean, there are some out there, they tend to start later, but I'd love to see K-12 really start thinking that way.
Well, and I love the fact there are different schools that partner with local businesses to create shadowing opportunities for kids. They create internships for students because there are so many kids who are thinking, you know what, if I go off to college and I really want to become, how do we create those options locally to begin with that either feeds that passion to really, really get with them to go, yeah, I am moving in the right direction. Or they got to spend 2 or 3 days at that veterinarian's office and thought, gosh, I didn't think it would be like this. And so I really don't want to do this now. And so I think it's great when schools can partner with local businesses and create opportunities for students to, you know, partnerships and internships and, you know, job shadowing opportunities. I think it's huge.
Well, and I think, you know, we've always had the, you know, what a lot of schools have always had, the parent or the community member is going to come in and talk to your kids about X, Y, Z.
Yes.
Again, it tends to be later. Many of us grew up and, you know, we had our moms saying, well, there's the mailman or, you know, there's the people who own the restaurant or isn't it nice? Mrs. So-and-so is at the pharmacy today. But this idea of where that, like where the flow of work comes from. The United States is unique in that we have created or replicated just about everything or anything done anywhere.
Right.
And so being able to help a child understand where an idea starts and how it can achieve somewhere, I think has a tendency to make our kids a lot more critical thinkers. And if we give them something to think about, of course, but I think it's definitely, you know, little kids to big kids need more exposure.
Right. So what can parents do to ensure that they really are in the child's driver's seat for their education?
So one of the things we've always said is that, you know, parents didn't think when they entered their kids into, you know, pre-K or kindergarten that they were having or engaging, I should say, in a political exercise. But in fact, they were.
Yes.
And it's not political in terms of, oh, who are you going to vote for in your, you know, for president, but it is political in terms of everything that happens in school is decided by a political figure.
By someone else.
And I don't think that ever really is not really where you start. It's certainly not where my family started. It's not where most families that I know started. Even the most erudite people don't think that way. But I think when you start your kids down the line of kindergarten, fifth grade, even high school, you have to know that what is happening in their lives is very much dependent on what you can do.
Right.
And so whether it's bills going through a state legislature, or local city council ordinances or zoning that prevent, let's say, your school from creating a driveway someplace, or even matters relating to what you can teach, how you can teach and when you can teach it, who controls your teachers or not, mm-hmm. how money flows. So we always say, you know, the old adage that's overworn but not under needed is information is power. You need to know why your school's even there. When it comes to charter schools, Cameron, people still don't understand why their kids or how they got to be in a charter school. It was a very new transformative idea when it happened in California and elsewhere. But we'll stay in California for a second. And every year, practically every week, somebody's fighting to put it out of business.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. I mean, I've been doing this charter school thing for, oh my gosh, what, 25 years now? And I just think to myself how many times I am still to this day explaining in our own community, we're not a private school.
Right.
I'm a traditional public school that provides these options under a charter. What's a charter, Cameron? Well, we get to chart our own course and, you know, we kind of go through this whole thing. But it is truly interesting that for the most part, the public is still really uneducated with what's happening with parent choice. What are the choices that are available in your community? And
That's
gosh,
it.
What? Who are these schools? And, you know, so The struggle is real.
Right. And who are these schools? And we need to constantly remind ourselves that it is like a passing parade. Just when when you think everyone saw the clowns, there's a whole other crop of people that come up and they have no idea that there's clowns coming down the parade. And so it's up to all of us to educate ourselves, educate our parents, make sure our students are educated, teachers, and that people realize that that you can, in fact, direct the course of your child's life by having the choice in education. And to have that choice means that you have to be publicly and politically vigilant all the time.
It's huge, but it's a responsibility that we all need to have. Absolutely. So Jeannie, talk to us about the Parent Power Index for those who may not be familiar with it.
So that is one of the tools we have to help parents understand the landscape of their state. Perfect segue. So the Parent Power Index is a ranking of where states stand when it comes to giving parents power. And parents in education have, it varies by state because education is, in fact, such a local, statewide issue, mostly statewide.
Right.
And so obviously California is very different than Minnesota. And it really ranks it on several different levels across the opportunity and innovation scale.
Okay.
And
a lot of different factors play into it, though.
A lot of things play into it. So charter schools, whether the state has choice programs, whether the state helps ensure teacher quality, and whether there is openness and willingness to incentivize innovation. California sadly has an overall PPI score of 62, which is a D. Your charter school law is sadly gotten weakened over the years. It used to be up in the B range. It's now 72%. You have no other particular public school choice or private school choice program. So that gets you a 50%, which is failing.
Yeah.
Teacher quality, 66, innovation, 68. So again, why is that important? Well, each of those, what's under those scores is really what you want to know and see. You want to understand what's different about your charter school law than somebody else's charter school. How does digital and personalized learning and other kinds of innovative efforts get supported?
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not schools have the ability to hire based on excellence rather than rules and regulations, whether there's additional money for people who go above and beyond. So a lot of things like that, transparency, whether or not parents can assess and find what they need to find on their websites. So it really is just a way to help educate parents and drive change, and then gives them lots of tools and resources so they can go out and get it. And it's updated in real time. Whenever there's a change in a state, this gets updated, and so can potential rankings fluctuate.
Well, I love that, Jeannie. And where can our audience find that information and view that?
Yes, great question. So Parent Power Index is at parentpowerindex.edreform.com.
.edreform.com. Okay.
Right. And you can just Google Parent Power Index, and it's the only one of its kind out there. And it's interesting, and it's just very, very useful because there's, again, it's not the only thing. There's tons of great organizations and data and research out there. What we try to do is take everything that's being said and done, add our own eye and analysis on it, and give people a tool that's very quick and easy to decipher, read, and then if you want to learn more, there's tons of ways for you to do that. But as we say in the PPI about California, Cameron, the fault lines are big in the Golden State.
Yes, they are.
Parents are swallowed up by the undue influence of the education blob.
But I love the fact that they can get information, they can personally be empowered by this, and then be able to talk intelligently with not only their neighbors, but also their local legislators, and then hopefully, when they press in as, once again, the legislature's after charter public schools again, they can talk intelligently about this and be able to point to some real information that can hopefully be, transformational in their own work towards making schools a better place for their own children.
We hope so. And the really good news is, and parents need to know this and be constantly reminded that it was parents working hand in hand with regular rank and file teachers who created the first charter school laws around the country and mm-hmm. who continue to play an enormous role in supporting them, advancing them, and advocating for them. And so a lot of people think that that's daunting, but truly when you learn this kind of stuff, you can become the best educator and the best advocate just by being informed.
I love that. Well, Jeannie, this has been an important conversation, and I'm so grateful you took the time to be with us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Partnering with Parents is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. Suggest a future episode or advertise with us by visiting classicalacademy.com/podcast. Consider subscribing to our channel, leaving us a review, and supporting our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.